Chapter 3. Speaking the Truth. In the early 1990s, a CIA, Central Intelligence Agency, employee called Carmen Medina worked in Europe for 3 years. When she returned to the United States, she found that leaving the United States had made it difficult to get an interesting job in the CIA, and she began to look for other ways to help the organization. During the time she worked for the CIA in Europe, she had noticed that there was a big problem with information sharing in the organization. Information was shared by finished intelligence reports, which were sent out once a day. The experts who wrote them had no way of sharing ideas before the reports went out. Things change very quickly in intelligence, and it was taking too long for the right information to reach the right people. Carmen Medina suggested that, instead of using printed paper documents, departments could put their ideas immediately onto Interlink, a secret internet used by the CIA. Her managers weren't interested. The internet was dangerous, and intelligence had to be secret. With printed documents, you could be sure the right people had the right information. It would be very dangerous if the wrong people got secret information. Medina kept talking about her idea, but everybody told her to be quiet. Finally, she decided to leave the CIA, but she couldn't find another job. She ended up working in a boring CIA desk job, and she kept quiet about her idea for a while. 3 years later, she decided to argue again for online information sharing. Less than 10 years later, Carmen Medina was involved in creating Intellipedia, a Wikipedia for intelligence organizations. It allowed departments to read reports from other organizations. It was a big change to the secret culture of the CIA, and it helped with intelligence for the Beijing Olympics and after the Mumbai attacks in 2008. In a few years, Intellipedia had 500,000 users and over 1 million pages. It achieved this very quickly and very cheaply too. Why did Medina fail the first time she talked about information sharing, and why was she heard the second time? In between, the world had changed. The internet was much more widely used, and the attacks of September 11, 2001 made it clear that intelligence organizations needed to be better at sharing information. Medina had also become Deputy Director of Intelligence at the CIA, which gave her the power to follow her idea. She got that position by learning to speak in ways that made people listen to her and believe her. We have all sometimes wanted to speak about something that seems wrong either inside or outside of an organization. This chapter is about how to do this well and without risks. What are the right times to speak, and how can we make sure people hear us? As well as Carmen Medina, we'll hear about an entrepreneur who tells investors why they shouldn't invest in his companies, a manager who argued with Steve Jobs, and why managers who appear to support you sometimes provide the least support. We'll also see how gender and race affect our ability to be heard, and why the photos we like of ourselves are the opposite of the ones we like of our friends. Power without status. Leaders and managers like it when employees offer help, do research, or ask for feedback. But there's one thing that is not so popular: making suggestions. In one piece of research in an industry, it was found that the more employees made suggestions to their managers, the less likely they were to get promoted. To understand what happens in organizations when people like Carmen Medina object to something, we need to think about power and status. Power is being able to control what other people do. Status is being admired by other people. When people without status make suggestions, we don't think they should tell us what to do, and we refuse. That is what happened to Carmen Medina. Her years working outside of the United States meant she had low status. She hadn't been able to show people what she could really do, so people didn't value her ideas. Years later, she had earned status because she had slowly gotten jobs with more responsibility in the organization. Then she got a job where she had to protect sensitive information. Now, when she talked about sharing information, it was part of her job. People saw that she stood for something and not against it. They started to admire her work, and this made it possible for her ideas to be seen as original. We don't like originality in low-status people, but we admire it when their status is high. The Sarek Effect. After having their first child, Rufus Griscom and Alisa Volkman were shocked by the false advertising and bad advice being offered to parents. They started an online magazine called Babbel that aimed to tell the truth about being a parent. In 2009, when Griscom tried to get investors for the project, he did the opposite to what every entrepreneur is taught to do. He told the investors the top five reasons for not investing in his business. That should have killed the idea. Investors are looking for reasons to say yes, and he was giving them reasons to say no. Entrepreneurs are supposed to talk about the great things in the company, and he was doing the opposite. But it worked. That year, Babbel got $3.3 million from investors. 2 years later, Griscom went to see Disney to see if they were interested in buying Babbel. He did the same thing again and told them, "Here's why you should not buy Babbel." Then he explained that people who looked at the Babbel website didn't stay very long. And Babbel was supposed to be for parents, but 40% of the messages people wrote on it weren't about parents at all. What's more, the technology behind the website needed some serious work. Disney bought the company for $40 million. This is called the Sarek Effect, after Leslie Sarek. Griscom was talking to people who had more power than him. He was asking them to give him money. Usually you would tell people what was good about your project, but that only works when people are already on your side. When you're talking to investors, they are looking for reasons why your idea won't work. In that situation, it may be better to talk about what is wrong with your idea. Here are four reasons why the Sarek Effect can work. First, beginning with what is weak about a business helps to put the audience on your side. When we know somebody is trying to push us into buying something, we usually refuse. But when Griscom said the words, "Here's why you shouldn't buy this company," they laughed and then relaxed. He had given them a problem to solve. Second, talking about what is wrong with an idea makes you look intelligent. People who say and write negative things are usually seen to be more intelligent than people who say and write positive things. When you say something negative about an idea, it shows you have thought about it. In Griscom's case, it showed he knew there were problems and he wasn't trying to hide them. Third, Talking about the problems with your business means that investors will trust you more. When Griscom talked about his problems, it made him look honest. Of course, talking about the problems doesn't work if your audience doesn't know about them, but Griscom's audiences were going to give him a lot of money. They were looking at his business very carefully, so he couldn't hide the problems anyway. They would find them. Also, investors thought that if he was admitting what was wrong with his business, there was probably a lot that was right. Fourth, audiences are more likely to support an idea when the problems are made clear. When Griscom told investors about the problems with the business, it made it difficult for them to think of other problems with it, and they began to think that maybe Griscom's problems weren't too bad. The unfamiliarity problem. When you have spent weeks, months, or even years thinking about your idea, you know it perfectly. It's not possible to imagine what the idea sounds like to someone who is hearing it for the first time. So, we often present our ideas to people without enough information. If we want people to accept our original ideas, we need to speak about them often and then repeat what we said. To illustrate, which of these two words do you like better? Iktitaf, Sarek. If you're like most people, you will choose Sarek. Robert Zions has described this. He showed people nonsense words like Iktitaf and Sarek and asked them which they preferred. If they had never seen either word before, they liked them equally. But when they had seen one of the words twice before the test, they preferred that one. And if they had seen it 5, 10 or 25 times, they liked it even more. I used Sarek 4 times earlier. There is nothing called the Sarek effect, and there is nobody called Leslie Sarek. I invented them to show how seeing the word already can affect you. Rufus Griscom is real, however, and so is everyone else in this book. My favourite test of this is when people looked at photographs of themselves and their friends. Some of the photos were inverted, as though in a mirror, and some were not. People liked the photos of their friends when they weren't inverted, because that's how they are used to seeing them. But they preferred photos of themselves that were inverted, because we're used to seeing ourselves in the mirror. One reason for this is that the idea or picture we're used to is easier to understand. Something that we don't know takes more effort, and that makes us uncomfortable. Making people uncomfortable. When Carmen Medina made no progress the first time she talked about information sharing, she thought about leaving the CIA. She stayed, but she didn't speak up to her managers again about her ideas for a long time. When she did, it was because of her manager, Mike. I guessed Mike would be a friendly, relaxed man, but he was the opposite. He was not friendly, and he got angry quickly. So why was he the right manager for Medina? Although he was a difficult man, Mike did care about the future of the organisation. Friendly people like everyone around them to be happy, so they are less likely to push difficult ideas forward. A man like Mike didn't mind making people uncomfortable, so he was ready to give Medina time to develop her uncomfortable ideas. Another thing that Medina noticed was that middle managers were the most unhappy with her ideas. It is often the people in the middle who don't want to make difficulties. They have made some progress in the organisation and don't want to go backward. The difficulties of speaking up. Speaking up to an audience of middle managers is always a risk, but it was especially difficult for Carmen Medina because she was a woman in an organization where most of the employees were men. I thought the days when women could not speak up in work were in the past, but I soon realized there is still a problem with gender. In organizations around the world, people expect men to speak up and to lead. But when women speak up, they can be seen as angry. When I looked at my own research, I was very disappointed. In an international bank and a healthcare company, I found that suggesting good ideas led to promotions for men, but not for women. Other research shows that male employees who talk more than others are rewarded and promoted, but women who talk more are judged negatively by both men and women. When women suggest changing something at work to improve it, their bosses don't trust them and are not as likely to change anything. There is no doubt things were difficult for Medina because she was a woman in an organization of mostly men. But she was also a Puerto Rican. Being from two groups like this makes a difference. Ashley Rosette, an African-American researcher, found that people behaved differently when she spoke up than when white women and black men did. When black women leaders failed, they were judged harder than black men or than white men and women. The Road Not Taken. In 1985, Donna Dubinsky was working as Apple's distribution and sales manager. It was a busy job, as sales of Apple computers were increasing quickly. Then Steve Jobs suggested that Apple stop using its 6 distribution centers and move to just-in-time distribution. Computers would be finished in the factory when they were needed and would be delivered to customers direct from the factory. Dubinsky thought this was a big mistake. She knew that Apple's success depended on successful distribution. She objected, but nobody listened. For several months, she worked in a group that looked at just-in-time distribution. Everyone seemed happy to go ahead with a new just-in-time system, except Dubinsky. She spoke up against the idea and told Apple they must give her 30 days to create a different system, and if they didn't give it to her, she would leave. She was taking a big risk, but she was given the time. At the end of the 30 days, she suggested a new distribution system, and it was accepted. People knew she had done a good job in the past. She had status. Many people would think that arguing with Steve Jobs, known as a difficult man, would not be a good idea. But Jobs liked people who argued with him, and he was open to new ways of doing things. And Dubinsky wasn't doing it for herself, she was doing it for Apple. Jobs understood that. In 1991, Dubinsky left Apple. She met Jeff Hawkins and joined Palm Computing, which produced the Palm Pilot, one of the first small handheld computers. But when Palm was bought by 3Com, she was again unhappy with the management. She and Hawkins left to start a new company, Handspring, which made handheld computers and developed a smartphone. A few years later, Apple developed the iPhone. Medina had wanted to leave the CIA, but couldn't. That was why she stayed and, in the end, changed the organization from the inside. Dubinsky did leave and helped to begin the smartphone revolution. Although Medina stayed and Dubinsky left, they both chose to speak up rather than remain silent.